I'm Harish Saluja. I'm writing a book called A House at the Crossroads, which is going to have most of my short stories. This one is called Arrival of the Normandy Train. Arrival of the Normandy Train. So one of my favorite poets, a German poet named Rilke, is regarded as one of the greatest poets of all time. He wrote mostly in German, wrote about 400 poems in French also. He wrote a book called Letters to a Young Poet, which should be on the bedside of all artists and authors and creative people. I have read it many times. A small book, among other things. I'm sure most of you are familiar with it. It talks about the necessity and the importance of solitude. I know in America it's not considered healthy to cherish solitude, but he says for artists, it's important. Love your solitude and try to sing out with the pain it causes you. Things like that. And good marriage is one in which each partner appoints the other to safeguard each of their solitude. So one of his poems is called Archaic Torso of Apollo, a very famous poem. It details the beauty and the power of a torso, which the poet finds in the desert. So there's no head, no legs, and yet he can see the beauty and the majesty of the sculpture. It's one of his many thousands of wonderful poems he wrote. I read this poem a long time ago, and like everyone else, was struck by the startling line with which it ends. So he describes the poem, the beauty, and so forth and so forth. And then he says, Du musst dein Leben ändern. My German pronunciation is not good. Apologies. Du musst dein Leben ändern. Wonderful line. It translates as, you must change your life. What? What's that got to do with the beauty of the sculpture? You must change your life. Okay. Who am I to argue? It reminds me of the ending of the film A Taste of Cherries. You know, you're familiar with that, I'm sure. Abbas Kiarostami's famous film, Taste of Cherries, which suddenly ends with the video of the crew and the director and the sound people and so forth at the end of a very poignant moment when the protagonist presumably commits suicide. All of us who are introspective have often said this line, you must change your life for one reason or the other. But I didn't really understand why this appeared at the end of Archaic Torso of Apollo by Rilke. Anyway, what do I know? Years passed, and I found myself at the Art Institute of Chicago. This was my first visit to Chicago. This was many years ago. Chicago hasn't been the same since Al died. That was the joke. Anyway, so I was there for work and with some colleagues, and last day we decided to go to the Art Institute of Chicago, which is the second largest, I believe, art museum in the country. Huge, huge collection. I have a whole system when I go to a museum. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to stop by each painting and then have a discussion with somebody. This is a very personal, private, beautiful time for me. So I generally make an appointment with whoever I am that I'll meet you in the lobby 4 hours, 3 hours from now, and so forth. And so that's it. So went around the museum, beautiful Iranian miniatures, contemporary art, some classics. And near the end of my time, I came across the Impressionist room. Didn't know they had so many Impressionists. Now it's going to take more time. So I ran downstairs, saw my colleagues, and tell them that it's going to be another hour. And I went back to the Impressionist room. So I've read the biographies of all the Impressionists, you know, being an artist myself, and I am on first-name basis with all of them. So I stand in the middle of the room, and I say, hello, Vincent, you know, Vincent van Gogh, hello, Paul, Cézanne, and so forth, you know. I recognize most of the paintings, I've seen them in books, have been studying them since I was a child, and been fascinated by them. And then eventually got a chance to see most of them in the great museums in the world, like Musée d'Orsay and so forth. Anyway, so I start going around, remembering and admiring each of the paintings. And then I suddenly came across this painting by Claude Monet. I had seen this since childhood in the books and was always stunned by it, absolutely found it fascinating. It's called Gare Saint-Lazare, train station at Saint-Lazare. Those of you who know Paris, it's the second largest, I believe, train station in Paris, Gare du Nord being the first one. And this one called Train Station in Saint-Lazare, and more accurately, Arrival of the Normandy Train at Gare Saint-Lazare. Beautiful painting, small painting, painted in the 1870s, has mostly smoke. A train has arrived, steam engine train has arrived, people have gotten off, and it's in the shed, and smoke is billowing out of the train, and it's just so light and so perfect. So I'd seen this in books, and I didn't realize I was going to come across it. There's one in Musée d'Orsay. There's one at the Harvard Museum. I think Monet painted about 12 of these, and God knows how many are in public domain. But anyway, this one is at Art Institute, and a chill went down my spine. And it's like, you know, meeting an old friend, somebody I had known for 30, 40 years and so forth. There's a bench in front of the painting. So I sat down on the bench and kept looking at it, you know, very small painting, 2 feet by 2.5 feet. But in this little space, he captures magic. Anyway, you know, I've been painting all my life. And over the years, the canvases have become larger and, you know, bigger. And I claim I need literally larger canvases. I need more time. I need better actors, people who like my work, and galleries. But the fact is, I find excuses not to work. I'm lazy, you know, and keep wondering about my capabilities. And there are always reasons not to work, as most writers and artists know. So here is this painting. It's not that large. It's not that complicated. You know, 1870s, long time ago, he painted this beautiful work, you know. And so I had this museum floor map with me, and I always carry a pen with me in case, you know, some new idea strikes. So I started writing that, look at this marvelous work. You know, the fact is that I am lazy, and I have a little bit of talent. I should come my shortcomings by working hard. Everybody knows that, you know, if you have a little bit of talent, but work hard and you can make some progress and so forth. But I don't do that. I make excuses, and I, you know, look at this, and I should face reality. I should shut up and get to work. Like Rodin said to Rilke, you know, you must always work. I think it's il faut toujours travailler. You know, again, my pronunciation is terrible. You must always work. So I'm writing this down, and then I write, I need to change my life. Oh, I suddenly remembered the Rilke poem. All those years later, in the face of beauty, in the face of excellence, well, excellence, you know, whether it's a great mathematical equation or a person or a beautiful shot on a basketball court or Lionel Messi scoring a goal, nature, music, you know, one should be inspired to strive to better oneself in face of such beauty. Now, scholars have different interpretations of that last line in the poem. Some of that is too obscure for a simple person like me, and I'm sure my interpretation is perhaps wrong. But for me, it was a call for action. You come across someone's achievements and something wonderful and beautiful they have done, and you need to look at yourself and say, go, get up, get to work. Anyway, so I'm sitting there, and I was interrupted. I lost in my thoughts, writing down, scribbling, and I was interrupted by a woman, and she came over and tapped on my shoulder and says, she was looking at me with great concern, "Are you okay, sir?" "Oh, why won't I be okay?" And I said, "Yeah, what's the problem?" She says, "Well, it turned out that I had tears running down my fat cheeks." And she was worried that, you know. So I smiled. I said, "Yeah, I was okay. I was more than okay. I was perfect, actually."